If you think we're on the run, we are.
Welcome to episode 11 of the Dead Zombie Podcast. Today is Sunday, the 11th of November, 2007. Got some great feedback this fortnight that we'd like to share with you, and we'll read that out in a second. That's before we go into the Dead Zombie newsroom to see what's new in the world of Dead Zombie. We then celebrate the release of the Christmas Specials DVD here in the UK by discussing The Love of Three Oranges, and after a week off, Tony returns to join me in that discussion. So let's get Tony on the line and go straight into discussing the feedback we've received.
So do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler?
Good evening, Tony. How are you doing?
All is well, thank you very much, James. You okay?
Not too bad, thanks. We've received a couple of emails this week. One from Dean in Australia. It doesn't say which part of Australia, but he says, "Hi, just emailed just to inform that I sincerely enjoy your podcast. I'm a 15-year-old Australian who fell in love with a show aged 10 when I first saw it at my grandpa's. He had one of the three tape sets. I am now currently up to Series 7 on DVD. Some of my favourite episodes are Room at the Bottom and The Battle for Godfrey's Cottage, because they show Mannering is actually more than a pompous twit and actually really loves Britain. And those two episodes have been featured episodes on our previous podcast, I believe. That's right, isn't it, Tony?
We've done them both, I think, yeah. Mm.
Room at the Bottom is particularly prominent in my mind at the moment because of the stage play. And of course, when I, you know, when you think about these episodes in your mind, you see the characters moving across the stage. Well, my memories, or my thoughts, keep on getting invaded by Leslie Grantham and Peter Martin at the moment, so it's all kind of a bit of a blur. But the battle for Godfrey's Cottage is also a good episode, certainly one of the better earlier ones, I think.
We scored that one quite highly when we did that, I think.
I think you're right. I don't remember exactly what the scores were, but it's always been one of my favourites. Dean continues, "Lastly, can I suggest an episode for potential discussion, and my favourite episode of all, Branded? I like this episode because this is about the only episode in which Godfrey, my favourite character, is actually given some screen time, as normally he is the forgotten character who just dodders around and is frail. Well, first of all, no problem, we'll definitely have a discussion about Branded, probably towards the end of January, as we've got most of our podcast plans now, Dean, but certainly we will record it. Any thoughts on Branded, Tony?
I like the way that Mannering has to humble himself at the end when he realises that Godfrey is actually a hero after all. So, no, it's an excellent episode, and that will get a high score when we do that, I think.
I think it will from me as well, again, just because there's a couple of really good serious moments in it, and as I said before, they're some of my favourites. Dean continues, "Thanks for the podcast, and I look forward to making an MP3 of my opinions in the future, which will be very, very welcome, Dean. We've yet to receive any recorded thoughts from listeners." He also adds at the very end that he hates Cheeseman. He's got an exclamation mark, and of course there's this ongoing debate of people who really like Cheeseman and people who can't stand him. I think we know whereabouts you fall out of those two camps, Dean. We've also received a message from a chap called Andrew Cheese, who's based in Stockholm, which is Sweden, I believe, isn't it, Tony?
Yes, it is.
He carries on and says, "By the way, I'm in Stockholm and grew up with Dad's Army, being 44, though I don't recollect seeing the earlier series when they were shown, only the later ones," which is pretty good, because I don't actually remember any of the Dad's Army being shown first time rounds. I think you're a bit too young for that too, aren't you?
Yes, I think I'm younger than you, aren't I?
Yes, nice one. He continues and says, "Great podcast. I think the show could do with a few interviews with remaining members of the cast or actors in the stage play." And yeah, I'd absolutely love to interview some of those. But thank you very much indeed for your email, Andrew. Lastly, we've had a comment on our website from a chap called Simon Pettit, and he says, "Hello boys, I've just listened to your podcast." Yeah, it's an interesting way of starting, Simon, there. "I've just listened to your podcast about the stage show. It was excellent. I'm going to the show myself in Hull on the 17th, so we'll check out Camp Pike and report back to you. Deepest regards, Simon." And I think we mentioned at the time Pike that we saw, seems like ages ago now, in Stevenage, come across camp. He was very good, but he did come across camp, so it'll be interesting to get your opinion on that, Simon. Moving on to news. Tony, over to you.
Yeah, James, the Dad's Army Appreciation Society magazine came through the door the other day. Had a good read of that, and when I got towards the back of it, I saw an article that we wrote for them. That's great.
Yeah, it was good to see the article in there. It's much larger than I expected it would be. So if we can reach an audience and explain what the podcast is, then obviously I'm quite happy for some free publicity. Also,
in the article, it mentions that both James and Tony are DAS members. You have now joined.
I joined some time ago. I did, yeah. I always said I was going to.
Okay. Good. Just checking.
There's another article within Permission to Speak. This is issue number 54, the autumn 2007 edition, yeah, that confirms the Bressingham event for 2008. And it refers to it as a Perry and Croft Day. Now, I believe, Tony, when we've been for the last few years, I think, but there was a Perry and Croft Day in 2006, wasn't there?
Yes, where they had Heidi High, I think.
And You Rang Me, Lord.
Combined with Dad's Army, yes. Mm,
it was quite a few programmes, and I think I preferred it when it was just exclusively Dad's Army.
Yeah.
But I think they're good events anyway, and the same individuals from Dad's Army come along irrespective of how it's billed. But that's now confirmed for Sunday the 11th of May 2008, and it is organised by the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, although it's open to everybody, held at Bressingham just north of Thetford. And if you are a member of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, I believe it's a little bit cheaper to get in.
The Dad's Army box set DVDs is being released, or has been released, sorry. That's out at the moment. So if you bought the videos and you've bought the series individually on DVD and you subscribe to the recent DVDs, you can now buy it for a fourth time. I'm going to. And also the Christmas specials that we mentioned have been released tomorrow.
We spoke about this briefly in the last podcast.
We've received an email from Paul Carpenter at the Appreciation Society. He says, to answer your query about the commentary, I confirm that Jimmy and David have done this. I know because I was there as an advisor, in case they had some of their facts mixed up. And Paul says, me advising them? Anyway, we spent a day at Pinewood about 3.5 years ago doing this. Ian Lavender was due to join us, didn't appear. I'm not sure if he added anything at a later stage. I'm looking forward to this release, as the Dad's Army Appreciation Society had quite a bit to do with their eventual appearance and the content.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Well, that certainly clears up the query that we had on whether or not there was a commentary, and it's not just one, it's both Dewey Perry and David Croft recorded the commentary for Battle of the Giants. The thing that surprised me there, Tony, is the fact that it was recorded 3.5 years ago. I wonder whether they had any plans to release them at an earlier stage, who knows. But it's something I'm very much looking forward to, and my copy should be winging its way to me as we speak.
Still regarding the Christmas Specials DVD, there's a good press release about that, the issue of that, and we'll paste a link to it on the podcast website.
Yeah, there was a little bit of confusion, I think, when we spoke about the specials last time, as we didn't know what special features were going to appear on which release of the Christmas Specials, whether it was going to be the box set or the individual release. And this press release from To Entertain clears that up, so you can take a look at that just by going onto our website. So that's about it for the news this week, Tony. Not too much, really, to report on.
Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun.
Our featured episode this week is The Love of Three Oranges, and that's to coincide with the release of the Christmas Specials on DVD. You're about to hear a clip, which is where Fraser is demonstrating his silhouette cutting. Now, this is where he looks at an individual and decides to cut their shape into a piece of black card.
There you are, sir. That's it. You to a T.
Oh, it's awfully good, sir. Perfect likeness. Terribly good.
Rubbish.
Just a round lump.
Well, you're a round lump.
6 minutes to be insulted, Fraser.
I think you're getting a bargain.
You're in uniform, I put you on a charge for insolent behaviour.
I think Mannerin's got a point there. I'd be slightly offended, Tony, if someone just called me a round lump.
The way the silhouette comes out, though, when you look at it, it was a bit like a snowman.
It was. But I have to admit, even when I think about that particular line, it does make me smile. And I know it's not the best clip in the world because it does rely slightly on a visual joke, but it's, for me, probably the funniest part of the entire episode. It just appeals to my silly sense of humour there. So what did you think, Tony?
I like it. I like the episode. I mean, just a few comments to make. This episode comes out, it's obviously a Christmas special, and it comes out between Series 8 and Series 9. So they seem to have had a long break between doing any recording, except I would say that just because I know it's 1976, I know that they've been recording all the radio plays around about that sort of time. Mm-hmm. So they haven't done much TV work, but they've done radio recording.
Yeah, this was the only TV episode during 1976. The public, for the first time in quite a while, had been starved of any Dad's Army. The last episode, or the preceding episodes, was My Brother and I, and that was 12 months ago. So this was broadcast on Boxing Day, 1976, and had 13.7 million viewers, which again is astronomical compared to today's viewing figures.
One of my favourite bits of this episode is where they're planning to hold a committee meeting to raise money, and Mannering says, of course there needs to be a chairman for this committee. And then they change scenes, and Mannering is giving a speech as chairman of this committee.
Mm.
Just the way they did that, quite cleverly done.
You're quite right. Well, it's one of the few examples of subtle humour, because normally they would just go ahead and say, well, OK, I will be chairman, but this time it just allowed a gap and a pause. I thought that worked quite well, too.
Because he always has to be chairman of every committee that's going, of course.
Well, absolutely. Well, obviously he has to, because he's the main character, he's the central character to the series, and of course it fits in with his personality of being pompous, and, you know, it's his substitute in life for achieving anything.
Yeah.
Is to be chairman of anything he can be. There's a couple of other things that's worthwhile mentioning here, and I think this is probably, again, because it's a Christmas special, but did you notice, Tony, there's practically every character under the sun in this episode. There's all of the platoon, there's even Sponge is in it, although he doesn't get to say very much. There's Mrs. Fox, there's Mr. Yateman, there's Mrs. Yateman, there's Mrs. Pike, there's
Godfrey's
Hodges.
Sister.
Yes, Godfrey's sister, Dolly, I think. The Vicar, the Verger again. It was actually done really well, and unless you're looking specifically to see who's in it, you don't actually realise that everyone is in this, and that must be extremely difficult to write for about 13 or 14 characters and give them all a couple of reasonably decent lines.
Yeah, and no Walker, of course, by this point in the proceedings either.
No, unfortunately.
He's the only one missing, probably.
Yes, I think he probably was, actually, yes. Even a town clerk gets to make an appearance here. There's a couple of things. I mean, this particular episode, I think, is... Well, first of all, it's notable again because it's only 30 minutes in length, and both the other Christmas specials were more than that. My Brother and I was 40 minutes, and Battle of the Giants got a massive 60 minutes. But it's also quite a simple episode in the way that it's structured. There's only really three sections to it, and the first two sections are relatively common. There's the parade, and again, you know, we've seen a parade in many, many episodes, but that's one of my favourite parts of Dad's Army, the way that almost every parade, you know, it's almost one parade per episode, and yet this was particularly funny, I thought. Then there's the familiar committee setting, so whenever there's an event of some kind, you've got the long trestle table with everybody sitting around it, and again, I think those particular scenes work, they're always funny. And lastly, you've got the bazaar itself, whereby the whole episode descends gradually into chaos. I just think it works really quite well without being too complex or too novel.
You're right in what you're saying. It all happens basically in and around the church hall, isn't it? Either in the church hall or perhaps in the side office. It's a bit like One Foot in the Grave, where they do the whole episode in the car.
Yes.
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but this is all happening in the church hall and the connected office.
Yep, I wonder again whether that was due to any restrictions on the set, as it may not have been used during 1976 at all. I mean, this was recorded on one particular day. It was recorded on the... this is quite interesting. It was recorded on the 10th of December 1976, and it actually went out just 16 days later, so that shows how quick it was cut together. So perhaps, I mean, there's no location shooting here at all. There's no external filming. In terms of how it actually works, what did you think of them all in snow gear? Did you think that worked?
That's the slapstick, and I'm never a big fan of the slapstick stuff. But I can put up with that. I mean, I think Fraser in his mother's wedding dress is quite funny.
I thought it was excellent.
Quiz question for you here. Godfrey says he's in his Piero outfit.
Yeah.
I had to look that up. Do you know what that is?
I don't know for definite, but I can guess. I think there was a, I don't know whether it was almost an institution, but there was a group of performers that were kind of posh clowns, almost. Is that right? Or am I
getting I think you've got it. Entertainers at Seaside Resorts I've got here.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah. Well, it's slight diversion of clowns. But yeah, he was part of the gay gondoliers.
Yes.
Which I thought was good. And you mentioned Fraser a little bit earlier in his wedding dress, and especially with There's a Veil as well. You know, that was my attempt at a Scottish accent. But I think John Laurie underplays that. And maybe it's because it is so ridiculous. He doesn't go completely crazy. I mean, you remember other episodes where I think Godfrey called him an eagle in Ring Them Bells, where he had the German uniform on. And John Laurie really overplays that, and he hems it up, he blinks his eyes and raises his eyebrows and tries to look like an eagle. Whereas here, he just says, there's a veil, yeah, I'm in my mother's wedding dress. it's not strange. And he underplays it, and I think that works really well. Pike makes me laugh in this, dressed up as a ghost as well.
I don't remember that bit.
Well, he's just
a ghost. He's got the white thing over completely over his head, hasn't he? Yeah.
The woo bit that he does gives it away as well. And I think that was quite funny. But although it doesn't really fit in, the whole scene itself is funny as a self-contained little scene, but nobody knows why they're practicing camouflaging in snow, and it doesn't really matter, I don't think, particularly. But it filled up the first 10 minutes quite well. And again, I think Pike comes out of these kind of scenes the best, I think. I just think his lines are really novel. And now, you know I continually whinge on about Jones?
Yes. Oh, he's got the white things over his eyes, hasn't he?
Yeah, but I think that's funny. this is one episode that I'll actually give Jones a thumbs up. I think he doesn't come off badly in this one. Makes me smile. I don't get so annoyed by him.
I think he was at his most annoying when he had the white discs over his eyes with a pupil drawn on it. And things up his nose as well. And I thought, oh, no. No, I disagree. I didn't enjoy that part.
I don't know if they were eyes drawn on. I think they were holes so that he could see through them.
Oh, you usually are right. I hadn't noticed that.
What about his monster brawn?
I do like that. I appreciate that. I mean, if I'd won one of those, my first thought would be, how can I get rid of it? And yet these people are actually wanting it for some reason.
So this will show how ignorant I am. What is brawn? Do you know?
It looks like jelly from the meat. That's what I... Is it not?
I don't know, that's why I asked. I think it looks fatty to me.
Yeah, it's like jelly. If you have toast, jelly on toast, I mean, that you get jelly from, I don't know, is it pork or beef or chicken or something?
I guess you have some kind of meat jelly, yeah. Well, there you
speaking
are.
Speaking of a vegetarian here, but...
Well, yes, you are, I forgot. Well, there's a question for you listeners out there. If you know what brawn is, then go on, enlighten me, educate me, and send me in an email and tell me.
I think I would be putting it down the toilet in small chunks, I think, trying to get rid of it.
Well, obviously very popular at the time. Pike's line, what kind of monster was it made out of, made me smile as well. And I thought that was good.
But what about where the motorbike goes over it? And I thought, there's a very neat cut in that brawn for a motorbike.
I thought that as well, but I guess the point is made reasonably well without making too much effort. I guess if a motorbike went over anything, it would make a bit of a mess of it. But it was okay. What about the actual bazaar itself, which... You know, the game was notable for a few things. We've already mentioned Fraser's silhouette cutting.
Yeah.
Which is good. I like these environments where they're all out of uniform and they're almost on equal status, because it puts the characters on a different level with each other.
Godfrey was very smart.
Yes.
Very respectable. I thought he did well there.
He always is, though, isn't he? Do you remember when he turned up in War Dance, he had a conjurer's outfit on as well?
You can never be overdressed, I think, or something like
that. That's exactly what he said, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
His sister features, as you mentioned earlier on, serving...
Mrs. Arthur Lowe's wife.
That's right, yes.
Real life.
Yes, indeed. I've forgotten the actress's name. It will come to me in a second.
It's coming to me because I've written it down. Yeah, Joan Cooper.
Joan Cooper.
Yeah.
And obviously this elderberry wine, when Wilson samples it, I mean, yes, he hems it up a little bit in terms of sampling and tasting the wine, but I thought he was very funny again. And
Godfrey says everybody's tasting it but nobody's buying it.
Which resulted in even the town clerk getting drunk. I thought Eric Longworth could have played a better drunk. I didn't think he was very good. And I think the best person out of all the cast, I mean, I know you'll come up with the answer to this, but who would you say is the best of the regular cast who, when they get drunk, plays it the most convincingly?
Oh, well, Mannering is excellent. Yep. Mm-hmm. Is that what I was meant to say?
Well, it was what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. In fairness, I think it might be the only cast member that I can remember getting drunk, but he gets drunk on a number of occasions.
Wilson gets drunk. There's an episode where Wilson gets drunk.
Getting the birds, yes, with his daughter, Pike's half-sister,
oh my goodness. Yes, must be.
Yes, indeed. Though I remember he was drunk and he was okay, but to be fair, John Le Mesurier plays Wilson as a drunk most of the time anyway. He's so whimsical. It's just an exaggerated version of how he usually is. What about those light shades?
it was all right, yeah. it was okay.
I think the actual vehicle of the light shades worked because you weren't supposed to concentrate on the lamp shades. I think it was leading to the conversation Mannering has with Wilson in the office about his wife, and he tells the bath story and the bath enamel story.
That is brilliant.
The incident of the bath, I think that's what Mannering calls it. And you're right.
You couldn't make it up, could you? I mean, some story about his wife sitting in a bath that has just recently been enameled and it all comes off. And I just think, where do they imagine these ideas from?
I have no idea. You hope that it isn't based on truth. But whenever they venture into Mannering's private life, Arthur Lowe really shows how well he can act. Because he changes his entire pitch and he sits there, you know, chin in his hand sometimes, and just talking to Wilson, you know, and telling the most ridiculous stories in an incredibly straightforward fashion. And I loved it. So, although I wasn't very keen on the light shades gag, the visual gag themselves, you know, where especially when Mannering uses the tassels to look through, I didn't think that was fantastic. I liked the conversation that he generated with him and Wilson. So I think Wilson, again, and I've mentioned this before, it shows his kindness. This episode shows his kindness once again, because as soon as he realises that Mannering wants an orange for his wife, then he tries to get Pike to get it, because Hodges won't sell Mannering an orange directly. And again, you know, that's, I think the more I've come to look at these episodes, the more I realise that Wilson does actually quite like Mannering. You know, he has got a soft spot for him, even though Mannering is pretty rotten to him at times.
What happened to the second orange? There were three oranges. He never sold the second one.
It was withdrawn from the auction because it didn't meet reserve price. Yes, indeed. I'm not sure. He didn't sell it to the little fat man in the front.
Now that bit is ad-libbed. I've looked at the scripts there, and that is not in the scripts. So that is literally Hodges taking the opportunity to poke a bit of fun at Arthur Lowe.
Well, didn't it work well? Because Arthur Lowe responded to it perfectly. You know, the physical reaction to being called the little fat man in the front. But I had no idea that wasn't scripted. Is 10 shillings a lot for an orange? I'm assuming it must have been.
10 shillings is like half a pound, isn't it?
What would that be in today's currency, would you think?
Well,
be like paying 10 quid for an orange or something.
Yeah, it could be more than that. Yeah, it could be 10, 20 pounds. Please no one work it out. It's not worth it, but it could be about 10, 20 pounds.
Well, I was trying to appreciate how much was actually spent on this orange, you see. And because I'm so young, I didn't realise how much a shilling was worth.
This whole episode is based on your food, isn't it? So, which is what makes it a good episode for me. Is it allows you to actually imagine and see to a certain extent what life was like. Because you and I just wouldn't get excited about an orange.
No, absolutely right. In fact, it's difficult enough to make anyone eat fruit these days. The government are trying. So. But you're quite right. Well, Tony, what would you consider of the episode as a whole in terms of your score now?
4 out of 5.
Ooh, you've gone slightly more than me. I've taken to doing what you've done in the past and write it down beforehand so I don't change it. And I've said 3.5. I'm not really quite sure why. I just didn't enjoy it as much as others that I've enjoyed. I enjoyed it because it's one that I haven't seen very often, but there wasn't anything novel about it. There wasn't anything that stood out and said, yeah, this is a fantastic episode.
Well, that's almost it for this podcast. Our next podcast will be on the 24th or 25th of November and will be the long overdue Six Bells special, where we'll feature an interview with the landlord of the Six Bells pub. And there'll be a discussion about one of the episodes featuring the pub, and that episode will be called Wake Up Warmington. As always, comments on this episode or the Six Bells, very welcome. Thank you.
And please continue to send in your comments, and any MP3s would be greatly appreciated, about the stage play, which has just finished playing in Wickham and is now moving up to Darlington and then Hull after that, I think. Get in touch with us also if you'd like to take part in a discussion about the play for our next stage show special podcast. That's just about it, I think, Tony, for this week.
See you in a fortnight's time.
Speak to you all soon.